This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 345, brought to you by the Seagate GoFlex satellite, graphically and iFanboy listeners like you. Fanboy.com, Pick of the Week podcast, episode 345. My name's Paul Montgomery, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Howdy.
And Timmy Wood.
Wait, what's with these names? I could probably explain that. Both Ron and Connor are Lord knows where. I think Ron's in Disney World. I'm not kidding. He's at Disney World right now. And Connor is, I think he's moved to piracy. He's on the high seas, as far as I understand. But they're both gone, so we have our old buddy Paul, of course, and Timmy Wood, staff writer, first time on the show?
Yes, first time, hopefully of many.
Okay, listen, there are thousands and thousands of people listening, so really don't screw up. It's my ass on the line here.
I won't. Hey, you know what? You called in a heavy hitter, and that's what you're going to get, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
I'm excited to be here.
All right, well, you put it out there. It's up to you now. No pressure. Paul, continue.
at ifanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics and then one of us picks the best one and writes about it on the website, and then we talk about it on this year's podcast along with various other topics of interest. If you tried to do that. I'll just continue reading the script that Josh wrote. I have giant balls.
That was weeks ago. We've been tripping over it for weeks as we keep forgetting to take it out. I tried to Ron Burgundy Connor. I almost got him too.
I'm Ron Burgundy. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder, warning, this is a review show and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's book. So if you're worried about that, deal with it. I don't care. Die in the street. I don't care about you.
Wow.
Like you.
That was rough. Wow.
Okay. There's the air.
This week, Josh had the pick.
That
and he chose an acronym.
Oh, man. Can I just tell you that writing a review with an acronym title is about as bad as it gets in the comic book reviewing game, which, you know, is to say it's not a bad game to be in. But the B.P.R.D., it's just terrible. BPRD, Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense, Hell on Earth, Exorcism number 2. It is one of the... There are, I think, dozens of BPRD miniseries going on right now. They're a little tough to keep track. It might be 2. I'm not really sure.
There's tentacles in every pie out there.
That's yeah, yeah.
And there's like 4 of them that are also Hell on Earth, I feel like.
That's just the current status quo, but they've really stuck with it and put it in the title.
Sort of like Plague of Frogs was the first one, and they're doing those like omnibus collections now. And I guess so now they're into the Hell on Earth phase. So,
well, it was a little confusing because that's how I read BPRD, is by hardcover omnibus collection. But I was like, all right, I'm going to be on the show. Josh picked this. It's 2 issues. So I went and grabbed them, and there were like 4 Hell on Earths, and I had to actually do some research. But I found it and I read it, Josh. But it's your pick, so I'll let you talk about it.
Must have been harrowing for you. It was not a tough week full of wonderful books. I'll be honest about that. But that was kind of good because every single time that a BPRD issue comes out, I think to myself, man, that's real good. And then I put it in a little list of books we need to talk about. And then when it gets to me, I find I don't have anything to say about it other than, hey, that was real good. So I really had to think about it this time, and when I was going through looking at what was happening in this issue, it occurred to me a couple things. Cameron Stewart, a guy primarily known as being an artist, a Canadian, not that I'm holding that against him, was the writer, co-writer with Mignola, whatever, however that works, and artist on this issue. And normally when I think of Cameron Stewart, I like his artwork a lot. It's very clean. It's a very sort of smooth, single line kind of cartoony drawing, good acting, but very smooth. And he really roughed it up a lot for this so that it felt like, along with Dave Stewart's colors, it felt like a BPRD book. It wasn't sort of the... I want to call Heron and Crook abstract, but definitely slightly more stylized, I guess. But Stewart kind of, like, if you start looking at the faces, and it was just a little more brushy, and there was just some more strokes and stuff around the artwork, and I thought it worked really well. It looked really nice. You know, here's a guy, he's pretty much a veteran at this point. He's been around for a good decade or so, working on all sorts of things here and there. He's worked with Grant Morrison a bunch of times. You know, he was on Batman Inc. for a little while. He did Sea Guy. He's done a bunch of things. He's, you know, he's a good storyteller. And I think that for whatever reason, I hadn't noticed, but his style fit in really well with the BPRD world. And I couldn't have told you that beforehand. This is the story of sort of a side quest, I guess, of the main agents. Before, they'd mostly focused on, you know, Abe and Liz and previously Roger and Johan and all those people. And this is just sort of one of the other agents. And it's a little 2-issue mini, which is very cool. I really like shorter minis. I'm learning after just like a decade of 6-issue arcs.
Certainly.
Love having 2-3 issues to sort of just do something and that's it. And you're done. This one, the agent, whose name is completely escaping me at the moment.
Strode.
Thank you. Strode. Ashley Strode? Yeah, go with it. Okay. She is assigned, basically, in the last issue, she was assigned to run-of-the-mill exorcism, possessed demonic child. She goes there and gets her ass kicked by the demon. And so they send her to Otobanga. And Otobanga is he's like a BPRD operative. He's this little old wizened African priest guy, And she learns that his deal is that he has a demon trapped inside of him. He's the vessel for this demon, and it's been keeping him alive for an unnatural amount of years. So when this issue starts, they are going to travel inside the spirit realm or whatever to take care of the demon, move him out of his prison, and into another vessel, which is in this instance a goat, an innocent, friendly goat.
Goats just are creepy, I think, in general.
They're Satan.
That's what they were trying to do in Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, which is a fine film. But
Yeah, that's true.
Goats have those demonic eyes, and
so
the pupils go the wrong way.
So the whole thing, it's just like it's a pretty basic exorcism story. It's a lot like Sam Raimi's Drag Me. I remember that movie. I saw that. Completely forgot about it. From sort of a comic book craft standpoint, it just did whatever it is. Whatever that special magic that Mignola puts in his co-writing credit for all these things, whatever sort of, I call him like a showrunner for the whole thing. He just makes sure everything fits in. It just, it had that BPRD flavor. And I really like the idea that we have been expanding and going and spending other time with other agents, and we're getting to know these other people, because the BPRD isn't just the sort of top guys in there. That's this whole, you know, crew of agents and you know, people who are in the organization otherwise. And these are just, you know, workers. This is their job. It's their thing. And I really enjoy that sort of blue collar aspect of it. Every single time they cut away to like a couple of random agents, they're always complaining. It was like management again.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. Cause I don't read BPRD regularly, but I think we're so used to stories, always trying to find that twist or that gimmick that they want to throw on it. And sometimes it is refreshing that it's just the gimmick is it's an exorcism story, and it just lets it be one. And that's why it just takes two issues. And for a second there, I thought it was going to have a big twist towards the end when things are starting to get a little hairy inside the spirit realm. But it doesn't. It just plays out simply, and it just lets the characters do what they need to do to tell the story.
And that's a
really good point. That's what I like a lot about all the, you know, Mignola-verse kind of stuff, is that there's a matter of fact quality.
Very much.
And it goes right back to, you know, the bare fundamental concept of Hellboy, and what he is that he's this extraordinary, you know, being, but then he says, you know, oh crap, and stuff like that. And it's just a very kind of blue collar approach to the paranormal. And I think there are a lot of things that try to do that, but none that are as mellow and confident as a Mignola book.
It's economical, and it's sort of clean. It's just sort of, here's the story. This is the stuff that's going on. There's no gimmick to it, ever.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. That's actually, it's a great point, is that, because sometimes it's hard to talk about what was good about it. It's just because it's just doing it well. It's, you know, if you go somewhere for food and they just make you a really good burger, there's no trick to it. They just do the really basic thing really well. And when it comes to comic books, there's nobody who's done it as consistently as these Mignola books for, you know, a couple of decades now. I don't know if it's been that long, but at least 10 years.
I also think Cameron Stewart's art, like, you're right, it does. I've been a fan of his too since for a while now. And looking at it with Dave Stewart's colors, it does, it seems to add like a layer of depth to it. And it's not like 3D, but it feels more, the shadows that Dave Stewart uses really makes, I think, Cameron Stewart's art stand out more so than it normally does.
Well, if you're going to have anybody color you, that's the guy you want doing it. Which is, I mean, he's sort of the secret link, you know, I think, not so much for the story, but by visually tying everything together, by having that similarity, he pretty much colors all the books other than sort of the rare exception. And he can make them all, you know, have that same palette. You know, which makes Guy Davis flow into Tyler Crook, flow into James Herron, work with Cameron Stewart. Like, it all sort of works together nicely. And that's the good part of that. It was just a really good issue in a week. There wasn't a ton of stuff that was happening in other books that excited me. It was just a really solid issue in the midst of sort of everything else that was okay. And it was, I was glad to be able to be like, you know what? I don't know if I've ever given a pick of the week to a BPRD book.
Yeah. And well, I think I might start reading it in issues now after this.
I will tell you that I started reading the issues just sort of randomly in the middle. I don't know when I started. I don't know if it was in the middle of a story or what. I just bought one day. and I've sort of been buying them all since then. But then I went back and I've been reading the hardcovers. I don't think I only have two of them. It all makes a lot more sense once I did that.
Yeah,
I was like, oh,
you can't go doing stuff like that, man. That's you can't go. You know, maverick like that. It's gonna bite. It's gonna come back and bite you in the ass.
Burning the candle on both ends. But yeah. You know what? Sometimes you gotta.
It just
burning
means,
the candle from the middle. That's there's.
Yeah, it just means there. That there's, I get to go back, and when I hit the part where I started again, I'm gonna have. It's gonna seem slightly familiar, but then also make sense, which I think is gonna be pretty sweet.
I think that now. Yeah. No, it will.
It's true. Moving along. Other books from the week. You guys know that Ramon Perez is a genius, right?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard this, yes.
Are you telling me you haven't experienced the genius of Ramon Perez?
Yes, but not in the book that you're about to mention.
Okay, that's okay. Fine.
Because you'd
that's
know fair. if you experienced
it. Yeah, you
wouldn't have some vague recollection.
Paul, have you been reading this all the way through? Because you were familiar with the text. I believe you were on when the first one was Pick of the Week.
Yeah, I have been. Unfortunately, my shop didn't have this copy, this issue this week, so I can't.
And that... is the
other
sad
than
part.
Say that it's been great and I can't wait to get my hands on this copy.
John Carter, Gods of Mars, number 5. This wraps up the 5-issue miniseries of Edgar Rice Burroughs as comic book translated by Sam Humphries and drawn by Ramon Perez, colored by Jordi Belair. The 5th issue was probably the best issue after the first issue. I would say about that. It's all pretty consistent. It's got great cartooning the whole way through. And... what a really good miniseries, and what a really sad thing that no one is going to read it because the movie didn't do well, or because people don't buy things based on how good the cartooning is. People buy things based on for the most part. I'm not talking about
there's a lot of John Carter and the Edgar Rice Burroughs and a lot of that license is out there in different publishers.
Yeah, Dynamite's
I think
doing
people
like
are so used
books.
To it not being good. And I think much with licensed TV and video game comic books, I think people have to get used to the fact that, yeah, there's some of those are really, really good and you should really try them out. And I was very impressed when I found out about the creative team for this one, because it's a different creative team than the first John Carter book that Marvel did. They had Roger Langridge and Philippe Andrade, if I'm pronouncing that right. And so they're out of left field kind of choices for, you know, a licensed book like this. But it's worked out really well in their favor in terms of critical response.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that I feel like they got those people on the book just before they blew up. So that these people who are now much, much bigger high profile when they started. Are now way into it. The thing is, it's not a book that gets talked about a lot, but I've everything I've seen from the people who worked on it, from Sam Humphries to Ramon Perez to Jordi, they were into it. They know they did something really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doing something really good with something that you wouldn't necessarily expect much from, I guess.
So what can we say that's it's really great about it? And I think especially in terms of the story, it's otherworldly, and it's stuff that these stories, it's based on novels and serials that predate, Superman and characters like that. So that it's something that doesn't feel like a rehash of stuff. It's going back to the source. And then in terms of the art, it's really dynamic. And it's the same of the previous John Carter book, too, is that they play with this thing where John Carter is, he's from Earth, but now that he's on Mars or Barsoom, he can jump around and stuff, and he's really strong and super agile, and they play with that a lot. So in terms of the world building and in terms of the movement and the superpowers, it's pretty cool looking.
And they don't actually lay a lot of that out in this. You kind of have to just read it, and you're part of it. If you didn't read the first one, and I didn't, and I've never read it, I picked this up solely. I saw the names on the front, and I just wanted to read it. But
okay.
this one is a culmination of this story. Is a lot of action. It's a big fight, and Perez actually really gets to pull out some of his tricks here. There's scenes where the whole panel is white and there's sort of scratchy figures on the bottom, all sort of in a melee, and that's all done in red, and then over top of them, 20 feet in the air, John Carter is flying through the air towards something, and at the end of the story, he loses the thing he'd been looking for the whole time, basically. And it's really sad. A door shuts and that thing is locked inside there. And it's just like a this bittersweet ending. And I don't know if they're going to do any more of these comics.
I was about to say, are they following the book? Like, Paul, you've read the book. So is Gods of Mars the second John Carter book? Is that how they're kind of following
it? Yeah, they are following. It's tricky though, because they would get to a point where John Carter isn't the protagonist anymore. He's a secondary character, and then sometimes he's not even really in it that much. And Thuvia, I'm getting the name right. She becomes sort of the protagonist. So, but yeah, I don't know if they're going to continue on.
I haven't seen any solicitations for more.
Right.
And
so
it doesn't bode well. But either way, we got this. It's really interesting stuff. Speaking of strange other worlds that people have a hard time understanding.
That's what I was going to say is, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey, where you're like, I don't know what is going on, but I'm visually so stimulated that I'm kind of okay with it. That's how I feel about Prophet almost the whole time.
Depending on the issue, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm getting exactly where he's coming from here. I know what he's doing. I get these, that's a cool idea. Then there's issues like this one where it's like, I'm just sort of going along for the ride, and I enjoyed it. But there are so many different weird beats, and like going into like the root system of a weird tree, and then now we're in outer space, and like, so it's a little hard to parse everything, but I still am enjoying it a lot. And I get enough of it. It's that thing like where they talk about, you know, ER or the West Wing, like, you know, just enough of the technical jargon of either medicine or the law or whatever to understand the context of what's happening, and the, you know, human emotion carries the rest of it. That's sort of the way I feel about Prophet. It's just so many big concepts, and the art is beautiful.
Things.
Yeah, strange sexual things. Of course.
What's the sit rep on this? Where are we at?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. And I want you're cool with that. I'm not picking on you. When I say things like this, it sounds like I am, but like, that's what I get about this book.
No, I would be if I'm being totally honest. So that there's a point where after the first arc of Prophet, it's revealed that there are a bunch of Prophet clones, and
he activates them all.
He activates them all, and then they each follow a different trajectory, and with the art changes, because, you know, there's the regular artist, Simon Roy, I think, has his stories, and then there's the artist on this one, Milo Giannis, no Giannis, I think is his name.
That's a great name.
Yeah, and he did Old City Blues, which from Archaea, which I loved a lot. And then Brandon Graham, who writes the book, also, you know, he drew the last issue, the previous one. So between the art changes, which I love the different art styles, but between the art changes and then the way he's jumping around in the story, maybe just because I'm reading them, you know, month to month and not backed up right together in a collection, I find it a little bit difficult to trace which clone I'm watching right now.
Well, they all connect a little bit. They all kind of flow. I actually, in preparation for the show, I reread all of them leading up to this. And so the end of the first arc, which is the first three or four issues, the right. first John Prophet activates them all. And then the second arc is the two-issue one that Farrell Dalrymple did. That John Prophet joins with like three other ones, and they awaken the first John Prophet.
Right.
And that's the John Prophet in this story, and now it's telling he's like an old John Prophet.
And he's getting older, yeah.
They're telling his story and how he's in love with the Liefeld crocodile lady
headband thing,
yeah,
which is the cover of the book. It's kind of funny. That signature like '90s like Greco-Roman wrestling gear. But yeah, and then he ends up in a giant like space whale in a spaceship, and then he turns the spaceship on and it blows the whale apart, and now he's rocketing through space. It's good stuff. It's cool. I think it'll make much more sense to me when I go back and read it all in one chunk. But
see, we understand what's going on.
We're
smart. We get this. We got it. We're cool.
Godzilla number 3. Now, this isn't the same one. I've lost track of God. There are more than one Godzilla series.
Well, there were the
King of the Monsters.
It started with
a legacy.
Phil Hester and Eric Powell's was the ongoing, and that stopped. And they had some miniseries. This one is written by Dwayne Swirinski, and the art is by Simon Gain. Mm-hmm. And Paul, are you reading this?
I've been reading this, yeah, and I'm especially interested because it includes my favorite Godzilla kaiju villain, Anguirus.
Batra? Oh, sorry.
Well, Batra's in there too, but Anguirus, come on. He's a big ankylosaurus.
Batra's pretty cool, yo. Anyways, I did not enjoy the first attempt at the Godzilla ongoing, but this one, however, I think is pretty fantastic. Basically, it's... the main character, he's getting compared a lot to Jason Statham because he's drawn to look a lot like Jason Statham.
It's
and
Jason
he acts
Statham.
He acts like what Jason Statham would act like in a movie.
Do you know his
and
name?
It's, his name is Boxer.
Oh, so we're just going to call him Jason Statham.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
You can do that again if you want.
I'd hoped that his name was so non-memorable.
but the basic idea is that it's Jason Statham versus Godzilla monsters.
And by this point, he's assembled a little team. He has his explosives guy. He has his ex-girlfriend who's like a scientist and gun inventor. And then he has a driver. And they basically form a monster hunting squad. And they kill their first monster. And then they turn to the cameras and they basically say, we can kill all these monsters, but you have to pay us all this money. And that's what they do pretty much.
Yeah, so it's like a street level Godzilla book, which is kind of a cool idea.
So we don't really get to know who Godzilla is, what his motivations are, what makes him sad.
No, but we do know that Rodan is pretty pissed because that's how it ends. I love this book, and I always feel like Godzilla is a hard book to make license to make a comic out of because the title character isn't really have a lot of personality.
So
I mean,
is he in every book?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, he's around the world stomping things, and then he disappears. But
his presence is known.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the upcoming, the James Stokoe Godzilla book. Because that's going to be off the wall. And, you know, he drew that, so very much. And that's cool because it jumps, like, generations. I think, like, each issue is in a different decade, which is a cool thing to do because, you know, Godzilla changed a lot over the years in the different studios and different film incarnations. So that could be kind of cool to see.
Don't let me miss that. I want to know about that.
The art in this is really fantastic and is not, I think, what you would expect from a Godzilla comic. It has a very, I want to say European look to it almost. I'm trying to think of like a good way to describe it, but like, it reminds me of like a gritty Tintin almost, you know?
Yeah.
That makes any sense.
That's interesting.
I don't know,
that's
Paul,
fantastic.
You could...
So Milton Caniff. I don't know what I'm talking about. Like, do people at home like, all he knows is stuff.
There's a little bit of Guy Davis in there and the way he draws the monsters and stuff, and yeah. I don't know.
It's pretty interesting, and I love the details of the how detailed the cities are in the background that are crashing behind the monsters. It's really fantastic. I highly recommend the Godzilla book. If you tried the other Godzilla ongoing and didn't like it and bailed, you should give this one a shot.
The Stokoe book is out in August, and it's called Godzilla: The Half-Century War.
Badass.
So check that out.
American Vampire 29. Connor had said something last issue about how it feeling right with Raphael Albuquerque back on art, and I was like, yeah, you know, it's fine. You know, he's right.
Yeah,
I was really appreciating Albuquerque. Not that I didn't like, it was some great guest artists on this, but you know, he just knows these characters.
No, yeah, you want Albuquerque on the main book at least. I think it's fun to go off on tangents with, you know.
Yeah, when you have Pearl and Skinner in a story, and you have Skinner on a leash in that sweet suit and hat, and then he's the guy. He's the guy to do it.
So where are we in time? We're in the
50s, 54-ish.
And Pearl and Skinner are part of their
agents of whatever this. I forget what the name of this one is. There's a lot of acronyms swimming around in my head, but the Vampire League Hunter people.
But it's funny that they're posing as like you know, the anti-communists and stuff, and like they're, you know, working for the blacklist and whatever, and but it's actually they're trying to root out vampires.
I love the societal overlay that is this book, because one thing that Snyder's doing is fitting it in between the cracks of history and why these things would happen then. And I always really like doing that. The idea that you look back at something historically accurate and say, you're not actually seeing what you think you were seeing. This is what was happening. And sort of having it all mostly mesh.
It's a vampire putty, like going into the crevices and the cracks of and the nooks of,
And in that way, it gets me past the over-vampirification of comics. And this book has never suffered from that. It's not a thing, but it's one of the reasons why it doesn't, I guess. And then I love, you know, going through different historical periods in America. I think that that's a ton of fun. And this one, this period, this 50s period, is so visually interesting from the sort of clothes and the way that the weird movie producer dresses and acts. It's just a lot of fun.
And just happens to have lions in his backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. It was such a... I was like, guys, come on. He's going to feed his cats. He's being nonspecific about it. Come on. And then Skinner gets in a fist fight with a lion, which I like, because he couldn't change. Or he didn't.
And I do love the tension of there being people trying to keep, you know, Skinner on a leash. And we've seen Skinner for all these issues leading up to that. You can't possibly contain this guy. So that's going to end bad for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. I just thought this was a really fun issue. In a way, like, I hadn't minded the ones before, but this one, I was like, oh, actually, I think I like this arc a lot better than that sort of last one, the sort of greaser one, which I guess it didn't really speak to me quite as much. Although one of them was pick of the week, I think.
You're somewhat of a socia, so I can understand that.
Yeah. On the completely opposite scale of comic books, we see a return to the world of Axe Cop with Axe Cop President of the World number one. So you're still down with this, because there was a good chance that maybe this idea had run its course, is what I thought. Maybe.
I can see how some people would just maybe need just one issue of Axe Cop, and that would be their fix, and that's all they need. I, on the other hand, I could take Axe Cop every month for more than 12 months a year.
It's in your Uncle Scrooge vault, and you just want to dive into it and
I love
splash
it.
Around.
What is it that you? I mean, I, you know, massive imagination or?
Yeah, I think the. I know it does feel gimmicky, that because we know that a kid wrote it, and so like that's kind of half the fun, is that kids have an unlimited imagination that goes all over the place. But one thing I do like is that it's just I just find it really funny, and just it's so strange. Like when people are trying to be funny, like you see the jokes coming. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when kids, they're just. It's the reason why Kids Say the Darnest Things was the best TV show when it was on, Josh.
Yeah.
there's a stream of consciousness thing.
Exactly, yeah.
To this and book I, that's, yeah.
Well, I was sort of playing devil's advocate. I made Axe Cop pick of the week before. I read this one. If you don't know, it's the collaboration of now the kid's eight years old, and his older brother who draws it, and the kid, you know, blurts out a bunch of story stuff. And then the brother turns it into a comic book that makes some sense.
Yeah,
not
and
a
I
lot.
Think we're all writers here, so sometimes whenever we read stories or see movies, you can start to see where it's going. You're like, oh, I know what's going to happen in the third act, or you know, I kind of get what they're setting up here. I have when it comes to Axe Cop, I have no idea.
There's no act. There's no act.
There's no
structure.
Act. Literally anything can happen. And that's something that's kind of liberating to read, just the fact that
it just keeps ratcheting up. It doesn't, you know, do the rise and fall of, you know, tension and conflict and things like that and resolution. It's just like, and I love that you can trace his decision-making process sort of in there sometimes, or like something will come up and, well, let's have a gorilla. And then he does this, and then he sort of has to come up with some kind of solution to get to the place where he wants to be. And like, it's very like, it's kind of like bald in that way. Like you can see everything there, the whole process. And as someone who writes, I kind of, it's kind of cool to see that, because I think we all go through that. So to actually just see it on the page is a lot of fun.
Junior Cobb is a great name.
And he is a great – he shoots things out of his tail. It's pretty – and I also think you can definitely see the work of the of Ethan Nicole or Nicole? Nicole?
I'm going to go with Nicole.
You can see him starting to like layer – like all the – everyone that becomes a cop gets sunglasses. You know, like those little details – that he adds in there to keep things consistent and I think also add a lot to the charm and humor of the book. Mm-hmm.
I got to say, in a world where I have literally seen everything that comics can do, this one was an original one.
Exactly. Yeah.
This isn't copying something that came before. It's, you know, it's this thing.
There's nothing else like this.
It's cool to have something with just like total abandon and not having to worry about cleaning things up. It just everything works out. Even if there's like a deus ex machina kind of thing to make everything work. That's fun. You can't deny that.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that.
I love that he gets a message that in a million years in the future, bad guys are going to attack. So he sends all the heroes into the future. And then it cuts to like a million years later and they're waiting and the bad guys don't show up. So he just sends them all back home. Like, I guess I was wrong. Sorry.
And of course, that backfires on them. Yeah, it's a fun book. Do you guys know how long this one's going?
Three issues.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think the last one was four or five, and I was like, all right, let's rein it in for a bit. I want to take a minute to talk about a sponsor for the episode. The Seagate GoFlex Satellite is the only wireless portable hard drive that streams content to your iPod and up to 8 other devices. With a 500-gigabyte Wi-Fi access and rechargeable battery, Satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, pictures, and documents to be shared on your iPad or any other device via the free GoFlex Media app or web browser. You can check it out by heading to Seagate.com/iFanboy, where iFanboy listeners, members, friends can get 10% off by using the coupon code iFanboy, which is pretty cool. I have one. I'm holding one right now in my hand. It's pretty rad. It's a little hard drive that has a Wi-Fi thing, and you can send it to whatever it is you're holding.
Frank Capra lied. You can take it with you.
You can take all of it with you.
And yes, I know Frank Capra didn't write that. It's originally a play, but he did the movie. Anyway.
Moses Kaufman, right? Kaufman and Hart.
There you go.
That's why I'm on the show. That's why I'm on the show, guys.
Sweet. Curtis J. Wiebe, you do a lot of books.
Debris, number one. Debris, number one. I did this in the Light Week feature on the website, and I compared it to things like Dark Crystal and something else. I'm completely losing my mind. Anyways, I think that there was a little bit. I heard a little bit of backlash on the site about this because it's been called a dystopian science fiction story. Don't look at it that way. Look at it as like a new fantasy world, because it's more about like magic and stuff. There's not zombies shambling around, at least not yet. But the idea is there's this little village. It's sometime in the future, and this little pocket of humanity. And they have to protect each other from these mystical earth forces. This is where it gets a little bit like crunchy granola. These like mystic earth forces, like demons that turn trash into like big monsters. And in this issue, it's like a big serpent thing, like
it looks
big leviathan.
Like a chicken transformer.
It's an angry bird.
Yeah. And there's other creatures that they can ride around on and they wear funny hats. And the other thing I was going to compare it to is Miyazaki's Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind. And that's sort of kind of the costume inspiration. So there's a little bit of a Japanese influence on the design bits of it. But it's Riley Rossmo doing another sort of complete, you know, 180 turn from what we're used to see. Like every time I see his art, it's totally different.
Actually, I really like that. Was the thing I didn't love it. It didn't really grab me that much from a story standpoint, but I was really impressed by sort of the diversity that Rossmo could show in his art. I thought it was really nice storytelling, and it just looked really clean.
Color on it. It's, you know, it's really, you know, bright colors. It's like totally different from Greenwake, which is very monotone. So yeah. And I kind of agree. It's I need a little bit more. It's very much a setup issue. But I'm interested to see where this goes because it's a very different kind of world. And but yeah, look at it as more of a fantasy than as a dystopian future. Even though it's kind of bad on these people. But I think it's more about discovering strange new creatures and, you know, different territories of this future world. So
awesome. I have a problem with Dark Avengers, and it's that Dark Avengers 178, maybe it's 9. No, it was, I have it right here.
The script says 178.
No, it is.
I trust the script.
Correct. Well, I did it, so it could very well be wrong. Anyway, I don't remember to pick this up. I don't see it on the pull list. I don't,
because it comes out every other week.
No, so it's because I'm looking for Thunderbolts, and I avoid Dark Avengers like the plague.
You know what's funny is I was thinking about dropping this when it came, because I did not care for Dark Avengers, the team. I know people are fans of that book, but those characters in the original Dark Avengers book didn't do much for me. But I will say these Dark Avengers with this issue, not the Thunderbolts part, which are still almost in the majority of the issue, it still feels more like a Thunderbolts book than a Dark Avengers book. But the Dark Avengers are actually growing on me. That's what I was trying to say, and I took a really long way to say
as long,
it. Sorry.
As long as it's Jeff Parker with these artists, with a sort of team of quirky people, he switched it up enough times in Thunderbolts that doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
It's literally just don't – I see it, and I go, I don't want that. And then I have to remember, oh, wait, no, it is the thing I want. And I realize there are less of me than there are of the other who are being fooled to buy it because it says Avengers on it. I guess. I hate to say that, but that's the reality. That's why they need this.
I definitely gravitate more towards the Thunderbolts. I thought that Thunderbolts, you know, the run, and it's still continuing into this in dribs and drabs. It's just, you know, they also shoehorn that the Dark Avenger stuff in there. And but no, I think that's some of the best Thunderbolts comics, you know, around. So it's my favorite, like Avengers kind of book. So, it's troubling, but and not as troubling as his Man Thing speaking. That can be a little weird.
Yeah, that's the thing that Jeff Parker's good with. Like it's fun. He's got a good sense of humor, and that is very much lacking in a lot of comics. According to my sense of humor, I stopped reading Spaceman.
I did too.
So that leaves Paul.
Spaceman. All right. So this is the penultimate issue of at least this arc of Spaceman. I think there might be more, according to Azzarello. But yeah, at this point, I sort of wish that I'd, you know, read the first issue and been like, okay, this is cool. Let's just wait for the collection.
Listen, Tinkin, Spaceman, boo. Not so much. Or because...
There's a little bit of that.
There's a lot of that, Bomber.
Get your boss Nass out of your system, Josh. Thank you. Okay.
That's not the problem. Jar Jar.
It really hurts. I like the gutter speak and like the weird lingo and language going on in this book, and you sort of have to relearn it each time, yeah. You know, but What does kind of bother me, the pacing, it's I thought this was going to be, oh, cool, this is going to be a great world to explore, this future world with this like kind of gorilla like spaceman character that's like proto human kind of thing that they sent up into space, and there's a bit of a like a murder mystery there, and then there's this kidnapping story that involves reality TV, and there's a lot of meat on that bone, and it's beautiful Riso art, but the thing of the pacing, it's just dragging out a little bit too long.
That's it, and that's what happens.
That's the thing. So, like, if this were maybe, you know, a 6-issue thing, that might have worked better, or if there were just different beats or something. But, you know, I'm interested in reading it all together. But it's just, yeah, there was a neat wrinkle where they another one of the, like, astronaut gorilla things, the spaceman, came into the story, and he's another kind of bounty hunter, and it's sort of like the path not taken, and have two of those guys who went a different route after their mission to space. So it's interesting, and if they do another miniseries, I'd be interested to see what he does with it, if it's the same characters or it's that same world. But I like the way he introduces us to this world and how it works. And so it's, I don't know. It's, but it's just, it's dragging on a little bit too long.
Very quickly, I wanted to just mention the Exile on the Planet of the Apes, number 4, which is sort of the follow-up series to the first one that Hardman and Bechko did, wrapped up in this one. And I really loved it. I think they found, for having Gabe not draw it, they found this Mark Laming guy who...
Oh, God, yeah, that was the big surprise of this. Because really, I mean, we knew that they could write a great ape story, but then they're like, oh, Gabe's not drawing it. But then, this, I mean, there are times, you know, where I had to check. I was like...
You can forget.
Yeah, you just forget about it, or like the first issue of it, I was like, "Are we sure Gabe didn't draw this?"
Yeah, but I mean, if you didn't read these, go back. They're a ton of fun, and also, you know, this team is gonna go on to write the regular ongoing book. So, with Jeff Parker. So do that. Go read.
So yeah, the first arc, more political intrigue. This one actually gets into like a full out revolution, and there's a lot of action in it. So that's really cool.
National Comics Eternity number 1, Jeff Lemire. Timmy, you read this?
I read this. I was excited about this idea of National Comics because I was looking forward to them highlighting some of the weirder DC Comics characters.
You're waiting for Plastic Man. That's what you're waiting for.
I would love if Plastic Man got more than just a one-shot, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. Anyway, so like I think the DC Universe is full of cool characters like this, and I was seeing what they were going to bring to the table with it because it is a strange character. And I feel like they kind of simplified him a little too much personally for my taste.
It's very Ghost Whisperer.
Yeah, it's kind of...
not that much more to it.
Lemire is a simplifier.
But Coley Hammer did... I am a fan of his, and he did do a really good job on this issue with his art and his layouts, I thought.
Yeah.
So...
He's an artist's artist. He's great.
Yeah.
So that's what we thought of the books that we picked out this week. But we also like to highlight some of the stuff that other people did. But we're going to start with the top 5 picks of the week by percentage by the iFanboy.com community. Paul, you want to read them out?
Sure. Coming in at number 5, Aquaman, number 11, came in 3.6%. 4, Transformers, More Than Meets the Eye, ongoing, number 7, 4.8%. 3, National Comics Eternity, number 1, 13.5%. 2, Uncanny X-Force, number 28, 20.1%. And my personal favorite, Manhattan Projects, number 5, 39.9%.
And speaking of, the first user review comes from Andrew Gabaret talking about Manhattan Projects, number 5. Story of 5 out of 5 and the art of 5 out of 5. It's all divisible by 5. Pick of the week percentage. It actually went down from the time that I did that part of the script. Anyway, like you said, about 40%, which is pretty... I was looking at the polls on this as an image book. It's amazing. Wow. Hickman is a sick, sick man. This book is consistently good, and this issue is my favorite, but I think I feel that way about each new issue. Earth's first contact with aliens doesn't go well. Oppenheimer gets the munchies. Werner von Braun finds it all very boring, and genocide is committed. Awesome, awesome book. Pick of the week.
Perfect review.
That's his whole review, and he said everything.
Bingo.
You know, it does. It gets every issue is better than the one before, and the one before it was really, really good. And all the same things that were good about it, except there's more good things.
They had a first encounter which ended in a shoot off, and he ate the aliens and absorbed their knowledge. I love and then throughout the book, the ghost or whatever, the phantom of the alien, the sea, is getting in fights with the other Oppenheimers he's eaten. I love that background detail. I think that's fantastic. And oh man, it's gross, weird, super intelligent. I love this book. Even the paper's cool on this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love
the paper quality is awesome.
I also love the after genocide is committed, the one alien that's not killed is just like, I'm really upset with you guys. It feels so.
This
like,
is your first time meeting aliens. You really fucked up.
He's like,
I'll see you later.
Like, are you gonna kill us? I'm just really mad right now. I'll see you later. Okay.
Timmy, you want to take a go at this?
Yeah,
next one?
I'll do it. Neb, he reviewed Aquaman number 11. He gave the story a 3 out of 5, and he gave the art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage was 3.6%. And he says, is it me or does this storyline feel like it is taking forever? My difficulty here is that I like the idea of the storyline. Getting to know these different characters and see a team that Arthur used to be a part of is really cool. And the fight with Black Manta has been really interesting. With this issue, however, we sort of take a step back from the action to find Black Manta's ultimate motivation. To me, it seems a bit late in the game to have such a big reveal, and I wonder how Johns and company will wrap up the storyline next issue without making it too packed.
Anyone reading this?
No. Sorry.
I stopped after. I mean, I really liked the first issue, but then it just did really faded out for me, and I, you know.
Well, then the Neb's assessment will have to stand. There it is.
There you go.
Thank you.
Sorry,
thank you, Neb. Neb, our Aquaman representative.
It's fine. That's why we do it. Sure. It's not just us. It's fine.
All right, and now word from our sponsor, Graphically. Creators and publishers, you're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many eyes as possible, as easily as possible, and Graphically has the best solution to do that. Upload your book, comics, children's book, sketchbook, photography book, just about anything graphic-based, and in just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting into Amazon's Kindle store, Barnes & Noble's Nook store, Kobo, and of course the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app just made for reading comics. Send your readers to the digital bookstores where people go looking for books. And with 29% of all adults now owning tablets and e-reader devices, and sales in 2011 increasing over 300% from the year before, it's over 3 million ebooks sold. That's a lot of potential customers. You can find a full list of pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more details.
Very good. Thank you. I also recommend that, but I'm biased. I also really do recommend it. Real quickly, we're going to go and try to tackle an email or two and see what we can do here. Tom from England writes in and says, I'm emailing from the suspiciously sunny north of England. I'm wondering if you give me some advice. I'm looking at attending a comic convention next year, and I've never been to one, and fear will be my last chance for years due to work and family life. I know that you get this question a lot, but my first instinct is to go to San Diego Comic-Con, and if I have one chance to attend one, would you say this is the best show? The other question is, and I apologize for using your time as a travel agent. It's cool. Is San Diego a good holiday destination if I extend the trip with my fiance? She's not a reader of comics, but I would like to share the experience with her as a whole package. Are there other cons and cities I should look at before I book flights? Thank you very much for your time and experience, which I'm making up right now.
Wizard World Philadelphia should not be on your list.
I agree.
I've never been to San Diego. I imagine it would be very hectic, but, you know, sunny vacation spot, I guess. There's, you know, you can hop in the pool. To get me out of the way, my instinct would be New York, because I think there's a lot of great stuff going on at that convention. It's just, you know, it's not as big as San Diego. There's a lot of publisher presence there, but then there's a lot of things to do. It's New York City. Yeah.
I was going to say New York as well, because I know that I have a wife, and if I visit a Comic-Con, she's probably not going to want to go to it. So I've been in this predicament. I also live in New York, so I'm a little biased as well. But Chicago, C2E2, Chicago is a great town to visit for vacation as well. I would say Chicago or New York. I would not say San Diego, even though I've not been.
You're both wrong.
Okay.
He should go to San Diego.
No.
Because if you've never been before, you should go once, because it's something like you'll never see before. Other than that, out of all of those places, if you're going to take a vacation somewhere from England, you want to go to Southern California. You just do. It's a beautiful place.
He'll burst into flames.
He won't. He'll be fine. He's going to use 50 plus SPF, and everything's going to be okay. But what you do is you go to the convention for a couple of days, and then you go stay at the Hotel Del Coronado or somewhere else in Southern California. You stay in a couple of different places, and you see what is some of the most beautiful weather in the world, these sort of lovely landscapes. You're going to experience culture and food unlike anything you're going to see in London, or not in London, but in England. And New York's sort of an international town, but because of that, it's a little gray. There's sort of everything there, and there's so much that it's out of the way, whereas Southern California is unlike anything, and I bet your wife is going to want to go to the place with the beautiful sun and the beach.
That's sexist.
You seem to know his wife very well. It's quite an assumption, Josh.
Well, listen, okay.
I'm saying New York has all that stuff just inside.
Yeah. New York has a great shop. Maybe your wife likes to shop. You can go. There's so much great shopping.
Are there places to buy dolls in New York? Because she might enjoy that in order to get her hair or nails done. No, that's just – no, I just – it's – I actually – it's. I'm not basing it on his wife. I'm basing it on English people I've known, and they love that stuff. English people go to Australia for vacations. They go to South Africa because it's beautiful out, and they're used to rain all the time. Although,
well, maybe
he's
been to all those places.
Sunny. I understand.
In closing, go
tacos.
Go to the Baltimore Con and go on the Wire bus tour.
If you feel like you're at home, go to Seattle. It rains. It's good.
Houston, Texas, there's a hotel that does a little con. It's just a tiny little hotel room.
It's fine, and then you're in Houston.
It's really hot.
What do we do? I don't know. I just want to sit down.
Let's go to Astroworld.
It's so hot. It's so hot right now. Please help. Deshaun Bowen from Knoxville, Tennessee writes in and asks, how much overall power do editors have on a book? I've heard that some editors at DC were changing a lot of the script based on their books, like Superman and Static Shock. These are rumors, Deshaun. It depends on the book, on the company, on the talent involved, on all sorts of things. There are certainly, I've heard stories, and I think that if you want to look overall at what's happening with DC Comics, I think that you'll definitely see not on all books, but on a lot of books, you'll see an editorial mandate coming in. A lot of talent got changed out. A lot of people I was excited about in the beginning put out books that didn't seem to be their best work. I don't know. Do you guys, when you read books, do you feel like you can tell an editorial influence?
Some specifically, I think, Stephen Wacker, I feel like if I didn't want to know what book he was editing, it somehow would come up, I don't know, either throughout the book or something. Now, that's not like a negative thing, but he just has a very vocal presence. On the DC side, I can't say as much.
Well, it's a plan-defying effect.
Yeah.
in DC. Exactly. You want to look at somebody like Mike Costa, who was doing that Blackhawks book, and then look at the work that he was doing on G.I. Joe, a licensed book, and where he was actually sort of let fly, and then whatever came out when he did Blackhawks, it was like a different thing. When he talked about Static Shock, that was a thing. The artist or the writer had a whole different story than the writer did, or than the artist did, and then the editor did too, and that seemed like a whole thing. And maybe that's just sour grapes. I don't really know. Yeah. But,
I feel like it's just like probably like any job where there's a boss and someone works for under that person and they have a project they have to work on and it changes from.
I don't know. I think it's very hard to parse. It's just like it's very, very nebulous. You can never tell because, like Josh said, you know, it depends depending on the creative team and which publisher you're talking about. And I mean, if you know of their tendencies and editing philosophy, like in real life, you know, like you might be projecting that onto it.
I've heard stories, you know, it's not a names thing, but I've heard stories about editors who want to be writers, you know, and they go through and change tons of stuff and the writers don't hear about it until later. But I know other, you know, I know of writers who are control freaks, you know, I can't imagine somebody doing that to Jonathan Hickman. Like it's like he'd fly up there and punch them, maybe not literally.
It does feel like it's harder to see an editorial mandate on books written by people with very, very strong voices,
auteurs,
like Jonathan Hickman or Brian Bendis or
Grant Morrison,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If they're anything like the editors that I fanboy, they're amazing.
I like to go into Timmy's articles and randomly insert the word pumpkin into one of the sentences and just...
It always helps.
See, you know what? I never know the difference because once I write something, I never look at it again.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Okay, we have... If you want to write in, contact at iFanboy is the place to go for that via your email. We have time for one quick voicemail. Let's give it a listen about the Birdman.
Hey, guys. This is Ryan from Worcester. I was just finished reading the Falcon miniseries from the 80s. And if the iFanboys hasn't read that, they probably should, because that's got almost everything from Reagan to the Falcon doing all sorts of shit. But the one thing I have to ask is the Falcon a mutant? I see somewhere that, you know, people think his connection to his bird, Red Wing, might be a mutant power. And he does fight a Sentinel for an entire issue in this miniseries, which if you haven't read, you should read. So I just want some clarification. If you guys know, or if you want to guess, do you think the Falcon is a mutant?
I looked up this answer. I will say my guess was correct, but I thought I'd. What do you think of Sam Wilson, the Falcon? Is he a mutant or is he not, Paul?
He's a were Falcon.
He's a were Falcon.
He's half avian.
He was bitten. He was bitten by a bird?
Yeah.
Of prey?
Didn't get his shot quick enough.
Wow.
So he got powers.
That's not correct.
Okay.
That's not. Timmy?
It's a trick question. He is both a mutant and also a superpowered being. And one day he still hasn't decided which his powers came from. It's this nebulous thing in his. I have no idea.
Well, part of it is he's really patriotic, right? So that lends to.
Wait, is the costume power. Is the costume part of his skin? Like it just that those wings drape off him like that? He's a mutant.
It's artificial.
Well, you only ever see him on a full moon.
Wait. What about the falcon that flies with him? Is that a mutant falcon?
No, just a bird.
An animal.
All right. He is not a mutant.
I was right.
Okay.
He is a regular human, and the Red Skull used his cosmic cube to form a bond. I lose the details of this, but to form a bond between Sam and the bird, because I think he was trying to control him at one point, and then that stuck around. And then it actually grew that Sam now.
What possible use could Red Skull have for him to have a telekinetic bond?
He wants to make him a superhero.
He's trying to screw with Steve Rogers. I'm pretty. That's everything.
Your friend can talk to birds.
Right. And then
feel so super soldier now.
It developed that Sam could now see through the eyes of all birds. So he says, you know, I can see through 500,000 birds' eyes right now. It took him a little while to figure out how to use that properly. And his wings are completely artificial.
So basically he rescued a bunch of old ladies that had fallen down. That's what happened.
Yeah. He's a much hipper version of the Vulture. That's basically how that works. But he's, you know what? He's a great character. He's the second or third major African-American character in superhero comics after Black Panther, and I think.
Interesting.
And I also read, interesting tidbit, his brother was the first, it said, character with HIV. And that's, so there's a lot of hidden guys out there fighting the disease bravely, apparently. But he's gone now, I guess. Tidbits, information, stuff like that.
That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for.
We have
Falcon Cast.
There were not a lot of good voicemails this week, is what I'm saying. We have other podcasts besides this one.
Sam find out from the bird? The little bird told me you've got a problem, man. We should talk about it.
He could, if a sparrow had been hanging out there or a pigeon.
Actually, does Sam say a little bird told me a lot? Because he should.
He should, like to excess.
Like he's sitting there with the results from the blood test, you know, in his armchair, and there's like a parrot up in a bird cage next to him, and then you see the next panel, Sam's like crying because he sees through the parrot's eye.
Do you think every time Sam is about to fly off with the bird, Steve Rogers goes, "Birds of a feather," like it's the first time he said
yes.
The joke, well, and Sam just gets really upset about it?
What they do is they're constantly trying to say things that would signal the end of the episode of a sitcom. but it's in real life, so it always lands awkwardly.
One in the hand is worth two in the bush.
And then they look and they wait for a music cue that never comes. And it's very weird. Plus, you know, he's always got birds around, so there's just shit everywhere.
Falcon and Steve are filmed for a live studio audience. That's what would be
sit,
at the beginning.
Sit. We have other podcasts like the Don't Miss podcast, which I think won't happen this week.
Right.
As far as I know. I'm telling you, San Diego knocked us off our axis in every possible way. But it will be back the week after that. And the Make Comics podcast, which will be back this week. I can tell you that. They're both short. Don't Miss is on Mondays. We talked to a creator about a book that's going to be coming out that Wednesday. And Make Comics is on Wednesday. And it'll focus on some specific aspect of making comics. Both shows, you know, 10, 15 minutes long, short bite. We're very proud of them. So look out for them to come back. Paul, take us home.
Check out ifanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book discussion and all the important news and discussion topics. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
The video shows are coming back, people. Not for good. I don't want to. Hold on.
That was
awful. We have video shows now. They're interviews from San Diego. We've still got a bunch left. So watch out for even more coming up. They tend to get better as we keep going, but there's already been a bunch of really good conversations. The Rucka show and the Wade show.
It was very good. I really enjoyed the Rucka show.
Yeah, stood out for me. But you may have your own preferences, and that's cool. We tried to talk to as many people as we find interesting in San Diego. So, keep your eye out for those. There's a new one every day for the next week, at least.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. With any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, whether you want to know what kind of adventures Sam and Steve and the Falcon would go on their sitcom, you can call us about that.
I wish the book was called Steve and the Falcon.
Steve and the Falcon.
It would be a better book. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes for this show or any of the other podcasts. No matter how many are in there, it does our vanity a lot of good. But also, you know, it helps push us to the top more often, which is good because it means that we get to keep making them. There it is. It's an ultimatum. Deal with it. Better yet, you are our marketing team. You are our street team. Get out there. If you see something you like, if you want to link something from the site on your social media, we really appreciate that. Tell people about it. Talk about the things you like. Not just us, but comic books, everything. That's how comics work these days.
Put a couple of episodes on a thumb drive and tie it to the leg of a falcon, some kind of raptor, bird of prey.
Your nearest telepathically linked.
Don't do that.
Agent Hipster's arrested for tying USB drives. Tell homeless people story later at 10. So that's it for the show. As Timmy can attest, it goes awful fast once you start. I'm Josh. Before we get going, on your way out, Timmy, where can people find you? What should do? Do you have things to plug? I feel like you do.
Sure, I can plug a few things. I'm on Twitter at Timmy Wood. You can find me there. I also do videos, funny sketches with my beautiful wife. You can find that on Tumblr at tumblr.com/TimmyLovesJulie. And I have my own podcast called Coffee Jerks, which is a ton of fun. And that's it. And also, I write an article called Comic Book Job Evaluations on ifanboy.com.
Which is my favorite thing that we do these days. It's a lot of fun.
Paul, you do some sort of show.
I do some stuff. The podcast called Fuzzy Typewriter, where we talk about stories, storytellers, art, and artists. And recently, we talked about all the Alien movies. We talked about that HBO show Girls. Josh was on. We talked about Game of Thrones. We got kinds of good stuff.
We got one.
I don't know
up.
What the next one is.
We got one.
And if you want to follow my antics, I'm on Twitter as Fuzzy Typewriter.
Very good. Well, thanks, guys. I can freely say I like you both better than either of the other people I normally do this with. But that, no, I really don't like them at all. So it's not.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a lot.
That's who does.
They're really awful. But we can talk about that some other time. And thanks, guys.